We're going to pray for these guys before we start. By any standards, with the range of the cover, there's quite a hard furrow plow. That's the first thing. We are relishing the challenge of having a big age range in the meetings, because it's helping us to just push through to where Bloomsbury really is. You know, the fact of the matter is that when I explain to other church leaders that on any Sunday we will have 15% of the congregation under 18, their eyes roll back in their head and they say, that's tough. So everybody who's involved puts in real effort. But on top of that, these guys are going to be talking about our mission with God this morning, and have been out there doing the stuff this week. I'm not sure whether it's the worst time or the best time, when you've really been going for it, to actually stand up and speak. It may not be the most coherent time, because at least you know what they're talking about is real and is what's been really happening. So as late as yesterday afternoon, on a day when he'd acquired another grandchild, I was still not sure. Oh, didn't you know? Actually, Phil's done. What is it? It's a grandchild.
I'll tell you in a minute.
Yeah, okay. Now we've really got everybody. Andy was out there. The point is that you have a real problem with Andy, because if during the week when he's concerned about the generator, you're not sure where the problem is, because if you read out loud his text, they say things like, Jenny is playing up again.
With a G. Not my Jenny.
And we think, you know, sort of, this poor woman's trying to have a baby. You would expect that she's getting overheated. Okay, let's pray and I'll give them their chance and see if they can improve on my joke. All right. Father God, I want to thank you for the people you're placing together in those three and the heart you put in there. Father, thank you that there is something within us that is genuinely a Day Spring Church. And Lord, by the acknowledgement of the weaknesses that exist, of our brokenness and our sin, we thank you that you're shaping something after the heart of Jesus in us. Now, Father, I pray for David and for Andy this morning that as they endeavour to engage with things that are quite difficult and quite on the edge to be able to explain, that you'll communicate heart to heart and you'll make us more the kind of people that you want us to be as we're sent out to join you in what you're doing. Amen.
Amen. Okay, the grandchild, first of all, was born at 10 past 8 yesterday morning. We knew that things were happening because WhatsApp went very quiet for about 3 hours, and Megan said, it must be silent because I think she's pushing. So that was that. He is a little boy named Leo Samuel, and he was 8 pounds. Oh, wow. And they went home yesterday afternoon. So there you go. Yeah, you know as much as I do now. I've seen the picture of him wrapped up with his hands up like this, and he looks very nice for a baby. Okay. I know, he does, he looks all right. He's, you know, he's not all been bashed about or anything. So the other thing, well, you know, it's a bit of a tricky track through, isn't it? Anyway, we're going to stop there. The other thing that just to, is that yesterday my wife bought me this blue jumper, and she imagined me wearing my blue trousers, blue shoes, and my blue stripy shirt. I didn't want to wear that this morning, but I had to wear the jumper, but it's time for that to come off now. So I've done that. That's out of the way. I just have to put this on, and then we're about ready to start. We're talking about the nature of God, our missionary God. And when I first looked at this, I had some problems really with God actually being a missionary God. It chunked it into two parts for me: Old Testament, New Testament. So with New Testament, it was quite easy to see that Jesus has sent us and that there's a missionary element to the thing. But, really the Bible, for me, stands as a whole thing. And so therefore, I ought to really be able to pull out of the Old Testament this whole sense of the nature and the character of God that is always wanting to go places, do stuff, actually be on the journey, be sending people, to the whole of the world. And I didn't really think that Israel really did that. And I had a real problem with that. I felt that God sort of started off the world and things went wrong and he tried to patch it up. And then in the end, he decided he'd better do something a bit different, because he tried the flood and then he had to stop the Tower of Babel and stuff like that. And then he started with Abraham and he says, okay, and you get the first bit where God says, okay, Abraham, you're in this place, but I want you to go somewhere else. I'm sending you. And so you get that little bit of sentness. Okay, fair enough. I said, I can understand that, there's that little bit. And there's a few bits in Isaiah, there's a bit in Isaiah 6 where, God says, who shall I send? And Isaiah goes, me. And then later on in Isaiah 61, I think it is, there's another whole thing about the Spirit of the Lord has anointed me and to preach good news to the poor and bind up the brokenhearted and stuff. So and you've got that sending thing happening there. But there seem to be only sporadic things for me. And the actual basic concept, if you like, from creation, the Garden of Eden right through, I wanted to see the underlying route, the real motorway bit of what God's really doing, yeah? Because for me, the big story is really important. What's the real feel to the thing? Not just plucking a few verses here and there to go, well, God sends us, and God sends us, and God sends us, So I then looked at God actually making up Israel, and it seemed to me that really he wasn't particularly, this is my first look at it, he wasn't particularly interested in sending people. He was actually more interested in community. So he set up Israel. And he gave them lots of laws. He spent loads of time going, you must do this and you mustn't do that, and you must do this and you must do that, and you've got to do it in this way, and so on and so forth, and this is how you're a good community. And I just felt it was all about community. And I was thinking, well, yeah, it's all about community, and then Jesus comes and then we're sent, And I still didn't feel, I felt it was a bit disjointed. So I thought, all right, okay, I've got to look at this. Now, one of the things that I picked up right at the start of this, because this thing, our God is a missionary God and his nature, I looked at my very first Bible. And it's, you can see that the cover has gone. It was a hardback. It's now a paperback. and it's quite old now, because I got it probably when I was around about 18 or 19. So thank you for that, yeah. And it's signed by, perhaps actually maybe even 16 when I was baptised, I don't know. But it's signed by a whole lot of people. But inside I've written some notes. As you can see, I've written various notes in here in red and black. But one is, there's two statements up on this top left, which really, for me, top left means I was planning to write more. I never did. As you can see, somebody signed it. But it says, God is in overdrive. And God is a missionary. And I sort of started from that point. I thought, well, come, somebody said that to me really early on in my Christian life. So I thought, okay, well, they must have had something. So I began to look at it, really. And I don't know if we can do this, but basically I started to look at this thing about Genesis. So you've got, I don't know if you know the overall story, but Genesis happens. Genesis means the start. Then you get, somewhere along in Genesis, you get the flood. So this is the creation, okay? And then you get the flood, then you get the Tower of Babel, and then immediately after the story of the Tower of Babel, you get Abraham, okay? And then, what have I got after that? I've just, then you get the Old Testament prophets, and they're a bit easier to actually, I had a problem with the Old Testament prophets, because only some of them seem to be sent to everybody in the whole world, most of them seem to be sent to Israel. You know, that was my first concept about it. And I was saying, well, this is just sending, it's always inward looking. What about all the other nations? What about the rest of the world and stuff? So, and then finally, well, actually, we get Jesus, obviously, it's not quite final, because you've got Jesus, and then you've got Acts. Right at the start of Acts, you've got that persecution thing happening, and the Acts of the Apostles have talked to. Okay, creation. This is what I began to discover. Creation, God says, go forth and multiply, cover the whole earth. Okay, so right at the start, he goes, go out over the whole place. So, I'd missed that. Flood. Okay, everybody's bad. He decides to wipe everybody out, bar a few people. And it was Dave Sandberg, as we were talking on the phone about this, he said, yeah, but what happens just after the flood? I didn't know. So I had a look at the scripture, and I actually look at the verses, and basically, God scatters everybody over the whole earth, again, after the flood. So you've got Noah. Actually, it's not just Noah and his wife, but it's also his sons, and there's a whole load of, I guess there's a whole load of grandchildren as well, you know, which is current. So they get scattered over the whole earth. Now, it was a bit confusing, because Babel actually happens then, and a lot of people anyway, in one place, get together and make this big tower, and God goes, hang on a minute, this ain't right, and we're going to have to sort this out. And so he gives them different languages, and suddenly they can't talk to each other about the building project. And so then it all sort of, the building project becomes, you know, like one of those building sites probably in Spain a few years ago. you know, just nothing finished. And then what happens is they get scattered again across the whole earth. And then you get Abraham, who is sent, and God seems to have a different plan. So he's created, it's gone wrong, he's wiped it all out to try and have a fresh start, but he's still scattered again afterwards. And then you've got the people actually trying to do their own thing, and he said, well, that's not right either, but we're not going to wipe everybody out, but we are going to sort it out. And he scatters everybody. Then he gets Abraham and says, right, you've got to go to a different place. And in fact, Abraham was this sort of guy whose dad had already been told to go, and his dad had gone part way, and Abraham gets to told to go the rest of the way. And they live in tents anyway, so you'd have thought it would have been easy, but it didn't seem to be. So Abraham cracks on, and he starts off the nation of Israel. And then you've got the Old Testament prophets, which I've commented on already. And then you get Jesus, who says, as I have been sent, so I am sending you. And then in the Acts, you get right in Acts 2 or 3, 4, somewhere around there, where they actually have all that persecution. Actually, it's just after the martyring of Stephen, isn't it? And Stephen gets killed, and everybody goes, woo, this is a good thing. Well, let's get the rest of them. And so the whole of the church gets scattered again and starts to go out, because they've been commanded to, but they hadn't done it. So they get in across. So I began to get a bit of a feel that there was a sense of this. Now, I dug a little bit further, right? Now, you know Moses, and he goes to Pharaoh. Now, this is quite interesting. Well, it was for me anyway, because I'm on this track now of working out that God is right with, I don't know if I can explain it very well really, but basically there's bits in there where it says God hardened Pharaoh's heart so that he could actually show God's glory in. And actually it was also to try and get Pharaoh to come in on the act really, but Pharaoh didn't do that. But the reason for it was that God was wanting to declare and display his glory over the whole earth. And so this really shone a light for me, because it went like, so God wants his glory to be over the whole earth, but he's only got a few people. He keeps trying to scatter them. He keeps trying to get them to go over the whole earth. And, you know, he does it in different families and, you know, that sort of thing, and individuals. Then he's got prophets that come up. Then he sent his own son. And, you know, and another big impact. Are you with me with that one, with the Pharaoh thing, the whole global thing? It really lit up for me the fact that God's wanting his glory across the whole earth. We sing about it quite regularly, I think. But I don't think we really understood. Well, I can't tell about you, but I haven't really understood the concept about that until I think, hang on, God is like this. Now, my first slide. I think that this is how we see God. I think, okay, grey beard maybe, you know, and all of that sort of thing. But we have this image of God like this. He is sitting in a chair. He is quite old, because he's been around a long time. And you can tell he's been out in the sun, because he's got his hat there. There's obviously family around somewhere, but he's just watching them. And they're getting on with things. And he's resting. And he's directing. Yeah? All of those sorts of images. By the way, if you look up old woman in chair on Google Images, it doesn't quite do it. Because the women are always doing something, even when they're sitting down. And you can't get the... Because I tried it, I've flicked it round. You'll see why in a moment. But I've tried to flick it round, you know, so that it was a woman instead of a man. And I tried that. I just didn't... Even the women sitting there, not knitting, look like they're either just about to get up and do something, or they're telling something. They're getting involved, and they can't even sit... You know what I mean? So, anyway, there you go. So that's the image I think that we have of God, really. I don't mean that we picture it in the front of our heads. I think we picture it in the back of our heads, as it's a general feel. God is looking down on me and he's directing things and wanting a few things going on like that. But I don't think it's like that. I think it's a bit more like this. I think God's like this. Now, I deliberately chose woman, okay, just to be... You know, we had old man, got to have young woman. Did try, actually, to get young man walking and see what that looked like. Didn't work. He was always on his way to somewhere working with a bag. I had to search for a young man walking with bag. And it didn't work. It just didn't work. But it did work, I think, with woman. She's happy. She's coming down the road. She's got a bag and she's got a folder. She is going somewhere with intent, purpose and joy. Yeah? And there's a real sense, I think, that that is how we should really be looking at where God is. So God, that's why I'm wearing the bag today. Okay? Because I want you to change your image, really. I want to change my image of how God really is. His nature is missionary. His nature is on the move. Okay. So, I'll leave you with this last thing, then I'm going to give you a question that you need to sort of have a little think about. If Jesus is the image, he is the image of the invisible God.
Firstborn of all creation.
Right, thank you, yes. He is the image of the invisible God. So when we look at the Matthew, Mark, Luke and John, the Gospels, and we look at Jesus, we go, that's what God is like. Okay, here's the verse that really sort of opened it up for me. Jesus said, the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. In other words, he's got nowhere that he calls home. He's constantly on the move. And I started to look at the overall thing of the four Gospels and thought to myself, he did have a home for a while, but then really he came out of that and spent all of his ministry time on the road. If God is like that, and he's on the road all of the time, you know, or he's constantly visiting other people and popping in. I mean, because if you think about it like this, Jesus could have gone to Jerusalem and set up a base and had people come to him, because he was such a good teacher and he was doing healing. People would have travelled all over Israel to hear him. Okay, but he didn't do that. He could have done, but he didn't. Didn't set up that model. He went around. And I just thought, okay, if God is really like that, if Jesus is really the image of the invisible God and he is moving around, then we have to take that as that's the picture we have. So I'm very happy with that image. Hopefully it counterbalances the video this morning a little bit, because there was no women in that one, and I think it's important that we actually do balance it up, because God is across the whole lot of us. In fact, anyway, there you go. Here's my question, right, because I've run out of time now, probably spent far more time than I should have. This is a question I'd like you to just sort of turn to your in twos or threes, whatever works. If we are sent as a church, what does that mean for us? There's one last little bit. We often think individually, okay? And I think the community element that God had in Israel was that the community was supposed to be missionary as a community, as a team. as groups, and so on. And it's much, much better doing that, I think. It's much less scary. Israel got it wrong, of course, lots of times. They spent far too much time feeling that they should be apart, and they spent too much time looking at how different they were rather than getting out there. And there's lots of other evidence about looking for the foreigner and the the alien and stuff like that. I can't go into that, we'll run out of time. So can you turn to each other, and just for a few minutes, because we're going to have feedback from you. I just warn you that we need to have feedback from you. Dave Sandberg, where have you gone?
Yeah.
Right, because Dave's just, we're going to just feed that back onto here. So you've got 3 minutes, off you go.
Right, I think we've had just 3 minutes. We're going to start bringing our the conversations to an end. Got my lovely assistant here to scribe for us. Right, has anyone got any thoughts on what it means for us to be sent? Anyone want to share anything?
Carol.
Yes.
Carol.
Stephen.
Ready to give an account of the faith that is within you. And I remember having that quoted to me by, I think it was a Christadelphian who was very annoyed at my intransigence.
Well, that's excellent. Yeah, so we're ready to give account of our faith. Any other ideas, any thoughts?
Yeah, church for me has been a tremendous support through my husband's illness at the moment.
Yep.
It's really, really helped me understand what church is about.
Yep.
And also, it helps me to know I'm not alone out there.
Yeah.
There is people out there that will listen to me, there's people out there that will help me and really care. So it's sort of like a sense of community for me.
Yep, so community and support there, so that's...
Stepping out your comfort zone.
Stepping out your comfort zone, excellent. Dawn?
Well, we've been saying that as we're all part of the church, sometimes we can't necessarily help someone we know is in need, but we know others who can.
Yeah.
And then another time we can be the one helping. So,
yeah. So we've got a pool resources, skills and abilities and knowledge and things. I think, Adrian, you were going to...
Yeah. I'm just kind of popping my head up there.
Right, I thought you were... Carol. It looked good.
I will say something. I was kind of thinking in New Testament, I was thinking that quite often what you get is you get two or three people who are like Paul and Barnabas or Paul and Silas who are sent out on behalf of the church. And I think... as a whole church, I was kind of struggling slightly with the concept. I know we are individually sent, and I think that as being part of the church, we are sent. I'm just kind of struggling a bit.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
So you would see sent as being it almost sort of like missionaries like Paul and Barnabas and people going overseas. And
I'm not saying necessarily overseas. I mean, I think there is... something about being community and being sent in community. I don't think that there's a kind of role for lone wolves, as it were.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure quite the whole church being sent. I can't quite get a concept.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. Carol.
My story is actually Danielle, so I hope she doesn't mind if I tell you. She doesn't know. Danielle's been talking to Teresa in school about what's been going on and what's happening and where she's staying and things like that. And Teresa was talking to me, and what she said was, "I wish social services worked like your church as a team."
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I just thought that was...
That really is. Makes the hairs go up on the back of your neck, though, doesn't it? Yes, Rolf, and then I think we'll move on.
Just probably to what we just talked about, I think possibly help Adrian, is we said to have a common vision.
Right.
Having a common vision.
Common vision, so yeah. Excellent. So there's some good concepts there, some good ideas, and interesting things. Talk about God being a missionary God, a sending God. We talked about, Andy mentioned that Jesus said, "As Father has sent me, so... so I send you. And so we as a church, a body of God's people on earth, need to see ourselves as being sent. As Dave's alluded to all the way through the meeting, it has been one of those weeks. I know at the beginning of it I was feeling quite tired after cabaret, but I have actually quite relished it through the week, and in some ways it really does energise me doing the stuff that we've had to. We had cabaret, and within that, you know, the guys who were hosting tables, the guys who were helping, I know Annabelle looked after Bethia and John so that Rosie and Paul could be there helping with cabaret.
Someone else gave her a lift home,
and all of these things. All of that is being on God's mission, is being sent, as far as I can see, and it's being involved. And people releasing people to do things is all part of that. And we've seen that in these last few weeks. We've obviously been helping Jade and family with all the things we've been doing. On Wednesday night, I was doing some painting with Andrew Murray. And we were just finishing up, and he said, "I wonder if this will inspire me to do some decorating at home." He didn't quite finish there, though. He then turned to me and he said, "You asking me to come and do this decorating has meant that I've done it for the last three nights. Could you ask me to go to 43 Moss Mead and decorate?" So, Donna, when you want your decorating done, just let me know, and I'll ask Andy. So that's been a lot of fun, and obviously, you know, all of that and all the involvement has been doing that. Andy, as we've talked about, has been tinkering with the generator, and it's been really frustrating. And I really think we do need to pray about that. Friday it ran for over nearly 2 hours, hour and a half. Friday night it was out doing what the bus does, broke down after half an hour. And this next week is really important for the bus and for the finances. And so we need to be praying that that generator works like it should. It's the newest bit of the bus, and it's the most problematic. So I really feel we should be praying that. Right, I have a little video that might give us some ideas on being sent. Let's see what you make of this. If I can find me cursor.
Sadly, in the next 18 minutes when I do our chat, four Americans that are alive will be dead through the food that they eat. My name's Jamie Oliver, I'm 34 years old, I'm from Essex in England, and for the last 7 years I've worked fairly tirelessly to save lives in my own way. I'm not a doctor, I'm a chef. I don't have expensive equipment or medicine. I need information, education. I profoundly believe that the power of food has a primal place in our homes that binds us to the best bits of life. We're not teaching our kids. There's no statutory right to teach kids about food, elementary or secondary school, okay? We don't teach kids about food. Right? And this is a little clip from an elementary school, which is very common for eyes. Who knows what this is?
Potatoes.
Potato? So you think these are potatoes? Do you know what that is? Do you know what that is? What about this? A good old friend. Do you know what this is, mate? No. What do you think it is, mate? Onion, no? Immediately you get a really clear sense of, do the kids know anything about where food comes from? You know what that is?
Here.
What do you think this is?
I don't know.
If the kids don't know what stuff is, then they never eat it. Normal. England and America. England and America. Guess what fixed that? 2 1-hour sessions.
Right, Jamie Oliver. Like him, loathe him. I know my wife said, I really admire what he does, but he isn't the person I go and have a drink at the pub with. But I really do believe he can teach us something about being sent and what it means. Simon Hall's pointed some of this up to me. He did a dissertation on evangelism and looked at all the stuff that Jamie was done and drew some real parallels with it. Jamie Oliver became famous because of The Naked Chef. He appeared on TV. He was a success. He was a celebrity. He was a TV chef. He didn't even have his own restaurant at that time. He was just working as a sous chef in a restaurant. And at that point, what would have any TV chef done? They'd have opened more restaurants, done more TV shows, become more of a success. But I actually believe he stepped over and became significant. Because the first restaurant he opened was 15. And there he took 15 young people who'd been failed by our education system, and he taught them how to be chefs and gave them a way of earning a living. He's actually saying, I really enjoy cooking. He talks later in that talk about how he's dyslexic. You know, cooking gave me a way out with the issues I had with education. And you too can come and learn to be a chef and earn a living and have success like me. And in many ways, that's like us with church saying, wow, come to Day Spring on a Sunday morning. We found this brilliant person called Jesus. He's blessing us. He's changing us. He's helping us. He's such a help to us. Come on a Sunday morning and meet him and glimpse him. And it works for some people. I expect a lot of you could go out and invite your friends and you wouldn't see them coming on a Sunday morning. And so Jamie found that as well. He had a restaurant. He was able to help 15 kids. He's been doing that every year for the last 10 years. That's 150 kids that he's helped. But he wanted to do more. And at that point, he went out. And he's challenged our government. He's worked in Germany, in Australia, in America. Challenged school boards across those countries to actually serve healthy, nutritional meals to our kids for school dinners rather than worry about the money and what they'll eat. So he's actually looked to change things and to help kids and to do that. He's gone even further and he's actually gone into communities and worked with young mums, much like we do with our one-pot cooking courses. We actually looked at a lot of the stuff that Jamie was doing when we were setting up the one-pot cooking course. And he's actually tried to help young mums and single parents and things to find ways that they can cook healthy, nutritional food for their kids and families in a way that fits into their busy lifestyles, and they've got the time to do that. And so rather than just being this celebrity and successful person, he's actually going out and trying to do something. And you pick up on that talk, and I'll put the link to the whole of it on the web, on the website, on the Facebook page. But he has a real passion. He really believes what he's doing. In fact, he says, "In my way, I am trying to save lives." Really shows where he's at. And whether you agree with what he's doing and how he's doing it or what you think about it, I think it really shows the thing about being sent and going out and doing it. So on Saturday night, we had Andy Flanagan. Dave asked him the obvious question, how does a hospital doctor become a singer-songwriter? What happened? And Andy said, well, in the church I was in, the tradition was if you wanted to help the poor and needy in the world, you trained to be a doctor and you went out to be a medical missionary. And I could understand that because my parents were missionaries, that's what they did. And somewhere in the middle of that, God stepped in and said, I don't want you to go and do that. I want you to be, I think Dave described it, a rouser of the rabble. I want you to change the structures in this country so that a billion people in the world who have no chance to better their lives might have a chance to improve and to do things. And so there again, Andy has changed the model and has been sent. And I really think Day Spring is a long way down the road. We don't necessarily see people as being sent as having to go overseas and do stuff as these churches used to see. I think with the stuff that we do, we've had the funnel, we've had the golf hole, we've talked about arches, and in all of that, that is about us going out, meeting people where they're at, in their communities, or however they, and helping them with the needs that they have, and then showing them the love of Jesus, and trying to draw them to Jesus and see them glimpse him. And so with Open Blue, with Cabaret, with Cafe, with the stuff we've been doing on the street, and as Carol's pointed out, the stuff we've been doing for Jade, the stuff that Julie's experiencing, all of that is showing the love of Jesus to people, touching people, and has ripple effects that actually draws people and points people to Jesus. And this is important because increasingly in this country, if we sit in our churches on a Sunday morning, we will not see people coming here. There are people from other countries, there are people with other faiths. Those people, in many instances, believe because of what is said and the way things are done that Christians aren't interested in them, that Jesus couldn't possibly love them, and they don't see the church as being relevant or part of it. And so we have to get out to those people. We have to show them that we care. We have to show them the love of Jesus. And there are people within our own culture who've been born in the UK, who've grown up, and because of the way they live their life or because of the things they do or whatever, they believe they haven't got a chance and that God doesn't love them and doesn't care for them. And again, we've got to meet those people and touch them and show the love of Jesus. Anna, we actually put it up on the Laid Back Stories of Faith Facebook page, and I will again put a link up. But Anna pulled up a video where David Mitchell was talking about, the comedian was talking about what he believes. And he said he's really annoyed because people think he's an atheist. And he's not an atheist, he's an agnostic. And he really would love there to be a benevolent God who created everything and was in control of everything, and there was something more when he died. And at time he did believe that, but he doesn't now. But he really loved that. And he said, and it's really great that there are some people who find that helpful and, you know, that works for them, but it doesn't work for him. And I think increasingly there's huge numbers of people across our nation. The majority of people in our nation are in that position. They're looking for something, they're searching for something. They'd love it to be true. They can't believe it. And the way we're going to reach them is not for them to come into the church and us to track them. It's for us to go out on God's mission to love them and to show his love and to do things for them and to make friends with them and to build a relationship and to walk the journey with them. Where at New Wine, I went to a seminar that was looking at new ways of doing mission. Being New Wine, they turned it into church planting, which is a whole different ball game to my mind. But anyway, we sat down and it broke out into groups, and there was someone there who has been working on a difficult estate in London, housing estate, for over 2 years. And she said she runs a community centre, so she's there from 9 to 5 every day, ready to help people in any way that she can. And she said when she first went on the estate, there was the person who's like the community leader, is the person everyone in the community looks up to. If they say you're okay, then no one touches you when you go on the estate. And she'd see this woman, really important woman, and she'd say hello to her, and the woman would blank her, say nothing to her. And that went on for 2 years. And then after 2 years, she was walking down the street, and the woman walked up to her and said, "How can I help you? What can I do?" She said, "Hang on, you've been blanking me for 2 years. Why have you changed?" And the woman said, "I was waiting to see if you were actually here for the long haul, whether you were willing to do it. Too many government initiatives, too many helpful people have come in, been here for 6 months, and have left." And that's where Andy with Open Blue in the Travellers community and all and the other communities he works with, that's where we're doing the long yards, and we're building the relationships, and we're doing it. And that's where we have to be seen to be sent and being willing to walk the journey with people and go with them. And so the whole thing with Frontline, and where, you know, you're, you know, the people you meet at work or the people you meet at the school gate or guys, the people in your classes and in the playground, they're the people. If you can show them the love of Jesus, you can touch them. So guys, I find this really exciting. My parents were missionaries. As a teenager, I actually said to God, if you want me to be a missionary, I'll go. And I felt he said, no, I want you to stay in the UK. And for whatever reason, I ended up working in Germany. And I remember actually saying to God, I'm really enjoying the job. I really enjoy the lifestyle I've got. I enjoy what I'm doing. I would happily be up a river in the middle of the jungle, living in a mud hut, working with a tribe of Amazon Indians or whatever. But I'm really pleased, Lord, that you've chosen this for me. And it wasn't until I went to, I think, the event for Revival, and there was, in one of the groups I was in, Alistair Bullen, who at that time was spending half the week leading a church and half the week running a company. And he talked about how the way he ran the company and the way he dealt with customers and suppliers and the way he looked after his employees. Half the employees at that time were Christian, half were non-Christian. If you were Christian and you worked for that company, when you signed up, you agreed that you would pray for all your non-Christian colleagues. You would, and the way you conducted your business and the way you dealt with your co-workers, was all about showing the love of Jesus and touching him. And he talked about how he wanted to treat them in the right way and show them the love of Jesus and to reach to them and touch them. And of course that's spilt out in how he dealt with customers and how he dealt with suppliers and integrity and doing things right and being honest and all of those things. And a light bulb went on my head. I thought, wow, I can do that in my place, in my work. Maybe only for my department or only with the people I work with, but I can do that. And that's what it's about. It's about touching people that we know and where we are. And to me, this whole thing says, wow, I can be a missionary too. And that excites me. May not excite you, because there's a lot of baggage there with it that brings that to me. But we're all there, we're all sent, we're all on God's mission, and we all have a part to play in it. I think that's about it, really.